I'm working for in the pre-API development team, and I'm also the maintainer for Kerberos, for Fedora, CentOS, and RHEL. And today I'll be talking about, well, Kerberos, pre-API, and the Bronzebeat vulnerability. So a few general words about Kerberos. So it's an authentication protocol relying on cryptographic symmetric cryptography, and it's like 36 years old now. It can be described, I guess, as a very early implementation of the single sign-on principle. If I can like run a quick poll, as who has been maintaining a service using Kerberos for authentication here? Okay, so a few more. And have you heard of the Bronzebeat exploit for Kerberos? No, okay. That's actually normal because it's something from the AB world, actually. So something that is often gets in the way of understanding things about Kerberos is the terminology, like this old vocabulary, like so the ticket, key tab, KDC, pre-authentication, ASREC, things like that. So I made my best in this presentation to try to use as generic terms as possible, so you can really get the main idea. So basically, the three terms I'm going to use in this presentation that are specific to Kerberos is things like ticket, key distribution center, and ticket granting ticket. To just give you a gross idea of how Kerberos works, you run authentication once against the KDC. It's the Kerberos server, basically. It responds with a ticket, especially in this case a ticket granting ticket, so a TGT, and then it uses this TGT to request tickets to other services, basically. So you can authenticate in all the services in your organization. So that's like the usual use case for Kerberos, but in this talk I'll be mainly speaking about an extension to this core part of the protocol, which is the MS4U extension. So it responds to it's a response to a common use case that you are facing. Let's imagine you have a web application, and this application has to access some backend services like an SQL database or a distributed storage system. And very often you have access control happening on this backend service, so you cannot access some user-related data that you cannot access using just the identity of a front-end service, so you need the access permission that's specific to the user. So what you want to do in practice is impersonate this user to actually access the resource they have access to. So the historical way we are dealing with that is that problem is by doing TGT forwarding, which is basically just you take this TGT, so this initial ticket, you send it to the front-end service, and then this front-end service can just reuse it to request other tickets in your name. But the issue here is there's basically no granularity in the permission you are granting to the front-end service, because it can just request ticket to any other service. So it's definitely something that had to be improved. So Microsoft actually designed this extension, so S4U. It adds two new mechanisms to the protocol. The first one is constraint delegation, also called S4U to proxy. What it does basically is, so you have the user, this front-end service, I'll be calling it the proxy service, and a target service, like the backend, like SQL database, distributed network volume, something like that. And so in API we provide a tool to configure some delegation rules, saying, okay, this web application has the permission to impersonate user for this backend service. You need specific permission to do that, of course. And so I'll be explaining that with a diagram. So here you have three agents. You have the user, the proxy service, so the front-end service, the target service, and the free API KDC. So, and you have each of them has a key, except the KDC that has the key of everyone. So, what we'll be doing when we're doing constraint delegation is first the user is going to use the TGT to run a request against the proxy service. Now the proxy service, to process this request, it has to access the target service as the user. So what it will do is run an S4U2 proxy request, providing both its own TGT and the what's called the evidence ticket, so the ticket the user provided to this proxy service. So FreeAPI will process the request. So there is a condition for this request to succeed. We'll see in a moment why we have this condition, is to have one of the flag in the ticket, the forwardable flag, set to 1. And if that's the case, it's going to accept the request, so send back to the proxy service a ticket for the user to the target service, and then the proxy service can reuse this ticket to run a request as the user against this service, and the request complete. So it was constraint delegation. Now, the other mechanism in this extension is called the protocol transition, or S4U2 self. It's meant to solve a different problem, basically. At least the way it's described by Microsoft is when you have a case where you have a service but which is not using Kerberos as the authentication method for in front of faced by the user, basically, to authenticate. You can use that to obtain a ticket for this user to the front-end service. So you can still integrate with some local services that are requiring a Kerberos ticket to work on something like that. And it's also a way to obtain some group membership information that are contained in the ticket. I'll come back to that in a moment. So how it works, basically, so it's called proxy service. I wrote that for the coherence with the other diagrams, but here it's not necessarily proxy service. It can be any service, actually. So it runs an S4U2 self request for user U using its own TGT. We come back to this forwardable flag thingy. So at this point, there is an attribute of the proxy service in the FreeAPI database. And according to the value of this attribute, the forwardable flag will be set or it won't be. So if it's false, you don't get the flag. If it's true, you get the flag set to 1. And then you send the ticket back to the service. So, and that's where the bronze bit vulnerability gets in. So something you might anticipate while looking at that is if you have a service that has the permission to request this forwardable evidence ticket, and this service also have a delegation rule with another service, it means the service is basically able to request an evidence ticket for any user and use it against the target service. So that's a scenario that is not recommended to apply usually, but if you paid attention in my previous... So I'm going to show you that in the diagram, it's simpler. We have a compromised proxy service here. It has a delegation rule to the target service. So first, it does an S4U2 self request. The proxy service does not have this rule that allows it to get a forwardable evidence ticket. So that's what you get, a non-forwardable evidence ticket. But the issue is here, you have this part in the ticket that is encrypted using the key of the proxy service. So actually, once it's received, the attacker could just decrypt this part, flip the forwardable flag, and then re-encrypt it, and send it to the KDC again as a S4U2 proxy with this modified evidence ticket. And then the KDC will check the forwardable flag. it's set, so then it's allowed. And then the attacker gets a ticket to the target service as a user, where, as you can see, the user, it doesn't do anything in this whole process. So it can do so with just any user, including a user that has administration privileges on this target service. Yes?
So, I mean, I understand that the reason why the proxy service is able to change the forwardable flag is because it's able to, because it's encrypted using the key of the proxy service. Mm-hmm. But is that also the same reason why it's able to impersonate any user?
It's able to impersonate any user because it has there's a delegation rule between the proxy service and the target service. But it does not have this specific property that allows it to request a forwardable evidence ticket. So this should not happen normally if a forwardable flag was properly.
But it can happen because the proxy service has the.
The main important thing here is SKU to sell this. Like, I want the ticket on behalf of user to myself. It was deemed to be innocent. Mm-hmm. Because it's for yourself, not for anyone else. Mm-hmm. And it's not forwardable, so you cannot use it as evidence to anyone else. The problem is that not only it can decrypt that area and change anything, the area is specifically not checksum. Mm-hmm. So you cannot verify that they flip it.
Yeah, the whole problem is this area is not protected. It's protected by the key. I mean, it's encrypted using the key of the proxy service, but that's all. And the proxy service cannot.
What I don't understand is I understand like how the proxy server in this case is able to change that flag, but you also said like it's able to impersonate any user.
Yeah, because the SVO2 self works for any user. It's not supposed to. You're not supposed to get a forwardable evidence ticket for any user if you don't have this specific permission. Okay, so, time flies. So, the issue we had in IPS case, if there was just, there are a lot of reproducers for this issue on AD, but there is actually none for IPA for multiple reasons, mainly because it was mainly an issue of encryption types. There are multiple encryption types for Kerberos, and our default encryption type, basically, on IPA, is HMAC SHA-2 encrypted types, and they are not implemented by AD right now. So that's why it was quite weird to implement a reproducer ourselves. Actually, there's a pull request here if you want to have a look. So the solution what was designed for that by Microsoft is something called the ticket signature. I'll skip some details. Basically, there are a lot of things in the Kerberos tickets, and there is also another extension designed by Microsoft. It's called MSPAC. It stands for Privilege Attribute Certificate. So it's another, basically, a piece of metadata in the ticket that contains various kind of information, and it's signed by multiple keys, as it's a certificate. And for this signature, it's basically it protects the encrypted part, including the forwardable flag. So that's the response to this attack, because here, if the attacker tries to flip the forwardable flag, it's still possible because it's only encrypted with the proxy service key. So the flag is flipped, re-encrypted, sent as an SVO2 proxy request. But here, before actually checking the delegation rules, it will recompute the signature, compare it with the one saved in the pack. If it's not matching, it will just reject the request right away. But we had an issue for CentOS and RHEL 8, because there we are using MIT Kerberos version 1.18. And this version handles generation of the pack in a completely different way. There was a major rework in MIT Kerberos 1.20. And because we have some ABI compatibility rules, we cannot just backport this full fix on the CentOS and RHEL 8 version. This is basically all we had in the API for KDB plugins. So there's nothing, we have no access to the encrypted part basically. So that's why we could not implement this fix. But the approach we took was different. So if we cannot protect this flag, maybe we can implement something to actually detect this attack when it happens. So there are a lot of information in the pack actually, including a list of security identifiers. So it's something that is specific to the AD world, but we have some support for it in IPA. And there are especially two SIDs that are interesting in this case. These two SID, basically the first one indicates a user was pre-authenticated, to use the Kerberos term, in the normal way. Or there's another one indicating that the evidence ticket was obtained using S4U2Self. So that's actually something we can use in this case to, we start the same way. So the attacker sets the forwardable flag to 1. Then it sends the S4U2 proxy request with a modified evidence ticket. And then what we do is, we do the same. We check the forwardable flag. We check the S4U2Self rule allowing to set the forwardable flag also, and we check what's the SID indicating the way the S4U2 the evidence ticket was obtained. And if we see that the seed is not matching the value of a forwardable flag, then we can just say this is actually a bronze bit attack happening. So we can reject the attack. The issue is, I said the pack was like a certificate, so it's supposed to be protected, but it's actually not the case. It was also compromised, basically, at some point. So it's there was a way for an attacker to actually modify the content of the pack, including the seed. This is VCV. It's basically a pack spoofing attack. It was based on basically how the content was signed, because to give some details, the initial signature is done by the proxy service key, and then this signature is signed by the KDC. But the problem is, since it's just signing a very small part of the pack, you can do some spoofing, etc., so to eventually modify the actual content of the pack. So this was fixed by Microsoft also by adding a new signature in the pack. So this time, so it's called the extended KDC signature, and this time the KDC uses its key to sign the full content of the pack, so it removes this vulnerability. So now it's basically the same approach, except when we reach that point, we check the extended signature before, and then we do this check I mentioned earlier. Yeah, so conclusion already. So yeah, I thought this is an interesting, like, typical example of the kind of tribulation you're facing when you're doing long-term support especially for security-related protocols. And it's also an occasion to talk about this S4U extension, because that's something that it's a good example of a gradual shift Kerberos is currently doing from the authentication-only protocol to some protocol also now providing some authorization information. I can already describe that with this list of seeds, but there are actually a lot of stuff, and there are plans to start using that in the future in FAPA and open source projects. So, yeah, that's all. Maybe. Okay, so I was quicker than I thought. So there are some reference, interesting articles, pointers to multiple pull requests, backports to CentOS, things like that, if you're interested. So now, if you have questions. Yeah?
How long does it take to implement?
Well, the patch, actually, it's relatively simple. There has been some hiccups in its deployment, but the main The thing is that you have all this kind of dependency, like we have information we want in the pack, but the issue is since this CV in 2022, the pack cannot be considered trustworthy anymore because you can spoof its content. So first you have to backport the support for this extended KDC signature to be able to actually trust the content of the pack, and then you implement this actual detection method.
It took roughly half a year to actually design the scheme on detecting traces. So it's literally detecting some evidence that is left by attacker which is not supposed to be there, but finding what you can trust from evidence took like a half a year in overall drawing board design. It's not really written in code. And then importing this extended checksum took another problem, because now newer IPA running on Kerberos 120 becomes suddenly incompatible with 118 because of the refactors. There was like checksum missing, and then another authorization data is missing because the protocol evolves and the older version doesn't understand it. And so so this a lot of work, not like technical, but more investigative. You can definitely make a movie about this.
And some politics, I guess.
And also politics, of course, yeah, because you have to handle certain things, even for older versions.
Okay, so time's up. Yeah. So, thank you.